You are listening to the Wells Tech Podcast, where we talk about technology that can serve the church and its work of spreading the gospel. Wells Tech is a part of the Podcast Network on Streams, the internet media site sponsored by the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Join the conversation by visiting our podcast website at wellstech.wells.net. You're listening to the Wells Tech Podcast for Wednesday, February 3rd, 2010. This is episode 117. Ignore that podcaster behind the curtain. It's that time again, another Wells Tech Podcast, a show where we talk about technology, but not just any technology, technology and its potential use in ministry. At my digital side, as usual, partner in crime, Minnesota gal, Mississippi gal, New Orleans Saints fan, Sally Draper. Morning, Sally.
Good morning, Martin. You stole the words right out of my mouth, I was going to say. Have to mention those Saints this week.
Who dat?
Looking forward to a great Super Bowl on Sunday night.
Yeah.
So been a long time coming.
Got a party planned?
Just a little family fun and a lot of cheering, a lot of yelling. My daddy taught me well how to cheer properly from the New Orleans Saints.
You have a Saints jersey? You have a Drew Brees jersey?
I don't have a jersey. I had a t-shirt from when they made it to the playoffs in 1992, but I haven't kept up with my Saints attire throughout all these suffering years.
Were you one of the bag-wearing fans?
No,
you remember those days?
Yeah, I can remember some of those.
The Aints? Yes,
that's right. Yeah. That's right. I actually have an autographed picture of Archie Manning from when I was about 4 years old. When he was a young quarterback of the Saints. So I've been a fan a long time. It's going to be hard for Archie going to watch his Saints against his son's team, the Colts. So it'll be interesting. I guess he wins no matter what.
That's right. Well, you have fun with that.
Yeah.
All right. I think we're going to be on the road Sunday, so we may miss it, actually, or at least part of it. All right. Well, we should probably talk about some technology, huh?
That's right. And today is kind of a special episode. We're going to be lifting the curtain on the Wells Tech Podcast, take a behind-the-scenes look at what it is that you and I do each week and how we manage to pull this off over a long distance through the use of technology.
And it's not any great mystery, but we get this question, I guess, fairly regularly, what tools we use and how we put the show together. And now that we're on episode 117, we've kind of figured out what works and what doesn't. The equipment seems to be pretty reliable, and our setup, hopefully from our listeners' perspective, is one that's listenable. So we thought we'd take some time and talk you through, you know, what makes the show. So what should we start with, Sally? Equipment or process, or what do we do here?
Well, I think right off the bat, we're going to want to give them some specs for the different equipment that we use. And Martin, you're the equipment guru in the partnership here. I do a lot of the online work. My equipment's pretty simple. I use a headset. It's actually a Microsoft Live Chat headset, and I'll have a link for that in the show notes. But I connect via Skype using my headset, and that's about all the technology I have to be, at least hardware, that I have to be involved with. Mm-hmm. You, on the other hand, have a little bit more of a challenge.
Right. Now, you're in your home office there, right? In the Parsonage in Sleepy Eye, and you have a broadband connection through cable company?
A Mediacom, the local cable company, and as long as the wind doesn't blow too heavily, it stays stays connected.
Any limbs falling on lines and so forth, yeah. And I I always record the podcast from my office in Milwaukee at 2929 North Mayfair Road, and if any of our listeners are ever in town, be sure to stop by. What I do each Tuesday morning is when we record, for the most part, unless we've got, you know, vacation plans or something like that, and then we work around that. But I have very little setup to do because we're fairly lightweight. I work off of two laptops, my normal work laptop, which contains all of the mind maps and the websites and information that I run through during the show. I have a second laptop that is really just dedicated to Skype. Felt that I didn't want to clog up one computer and the processor on it with doing VoIP, which Skype does for us, and then also wanting to manipulate a mind map and open up websites and so on and so forth. If we do have voicemail, sometimes I will play them from my Dell laptop into the mixer, which is kind of the hub of all of the audio that goes on in the show. That's an Alesis Multimix 12 Firewire mixer. We don't use all 12 channels, of course. We usually only use two, sometimes three, depending on guests. And if we've got somebody in studio, as we'll call it, which is essentially on the other side of my desk where I hook up another microphone or two, if we're interviewing somebody from the building here or somebody local that would come in. I've got a microphone, so I use a Audio Technica P48 Cardio condenser mic. And what they call a wind or spit screen, so that you don't hear me slobber all over the microphone. And my voice probably seems a little bit gravelly today, Sally, because I am working on a nice little cold. So thank goodness for the wind screen, as it were.
And you're wearing a headset as well, Martin.
I am a Sennheiser HD205. None of this is really expensive equipment. We kind of did this on a budget, and just enough to get to the point where we've got a good solid recording. Probably where we spent the most money is in the recording. We record to a solid state Marantz recorder that connects via USB to my laptop, and it records on a CF card. So that's portable enough that I can put batteries in it, and if I'm doing remote interviews, which we've done over the past couple years, three or four of those, that works really well. I can plug in a handheld mic to that and get really good quality sound.
So, Martin, that recording is actually done on the device, and you connect it to the USB afterwards to transfer the
Correct.
Data over?
Yeah, it doesn't stream directly. So it's recorded to the CF card, and then I copy it. Just, you know, drag and drop the file, the MP3 file, over to my desktop. Should mention that I always have a backup. We always do a backup recording of the Skype conversation through a little utility called Pamela for Skype. And that records your voice and my voice as we go through it. I've only had to use that a couple times because it's a little lower quality recording, usually because it's operator error of some sort on the Marantz, but everything usually works really well with that setup.
I can remember two times back in the early days of WellsTech where we recorded the entire show. Mm-hmm. And then had to record the entire show over again because of recording difficulty. That hasn't happened in a long time, knock on wood.
So. Yeah, that's a bummer.
That was, yeah.
That's the kiss of death for a podcast, especially when you're doing an hour show. And you never get it quite the same. And you enhance, and hopefully that didn't come through in the show itself. But spending 2 hours for a one-hour show is not advisable.
Not a good thing, no.
Yep.
So after we're done, we both kind of go off in our different directions to do the post-production tasks that are involved. I do a lot of work on the website, putting mm-hmm. together the show notes, adding the millions of links that we talk about every week.
That's right.
And you go off and do a lot of the audio editing and mixing process, putting in the different components of the show and stringing them all together into one audio file.
Yeah, we get a bunch of audio files that come out of each show, depending on the interview. For instance, this week's interview, we split into two. We're going to interview Don Patterson and what is his partner's name? I got to scroll down here. Bill Esslinger, who joined us. And because it was about a 20-minute interview, we decided to split that in two. So I've got to do a little editing on that. And we had some Skype issues with that, so we had to edit those out. I have a lead-in, you know, our WellsTech lead-in. We have I record an intro. And we have our conversation. Then we split it at the interview, which we almost always do ahead of time, because it's very difficult to schedule everybody, you know, at 9 o'clock on Tuesday morning. And so we splice that in. Then we splice in the second part of our conversation, usually picking up with our ministry resources and picks of the week and whatnot. And then finally, the music from our Wells artists that we tack on at the end. So it's it's not hard. It's a little click and drag and cut and slice, and you know, half hour later, it's essentially done, and we export a compressed file to MP3, and then you do the rest of it.
Yep, and you, I'm always waiting for your the word with the title of the show. That's a big mystery to me.
I get to pick
me,
the title, yes.
You picked the title, and, so
I'm
and
the
then
one
you sent
to blame,
me the times. I think it was way back in probably show 5 or 6, Professor Grunwald from MLC suggested we add times to the show so that we actually have time markers so people can jump to the different segments of the show if they want to reference a specific part of the show. And so you do a little bit of listening on your part to come up with those different time markers as well.
Yep, yep. And a lot of people comment on one of the, I think one of the neat features of the show, and we don't have it every show, but most shows, is the interview. So we've got questions before about how do we pick who gets interviewed, and Sally, you want to kind of, you know, pull back the curtain on that process?
Well, I think we both just kind of keep our eyes and ears open.
We fly by the seat of our pants. That's the secret.
The magic of podcasting, that we've had 117 shows and had interviews for the vast majority of those.
Yep.
Lots of different resources, a lot of them obviously well-centric, but I think we've branched out and had interviews outside of that as well, and just try to keep a good balance, what's in the news, what's pertinent, what's going on that's of interest or innovative in different congregation and school settings. And what's neat about it is, as we prepare for those interviews, we actually seed the interviewees with questions. We send some questions for them to start thinking about and that kind of thing. But I love it when we actually get into the interviews, because the conversations can really go whatever direction they tend, and it's always interesting.
Yep. And we've never had anybody refuse an interview. So
that's pretty good record.
That's been very nice. We've had a couple people on a couple times, and hopefully we will not run out, but there, I think as technology advances and it kind of is more adopted in more locations in the Synod, we're going to see more innovation, and that will, you know, we'll have more attention to those types of things and get those people on the show as well. So we're always looking for interviews. So if our listeners have ideas, or if you have an idea that you'd like to share, we would welcome that and have you on the show too. And then finally, how do we get the word out, Sally?
Well, we use a variety of software resources to share the information. Obviously, we have our WordPress blog, the wellstech.wells.net. That's kind of the central point of all the information. And the audio file is actually posted in Drupal, which is where we publish our streams, media resources. And then I just use a link to that as an enclosure in my WordPress file. And that's what WordPress does all the work of generating the RSS feed, which is technically a podcast feed because it has an audio file connected with it. So that feed is sent through FeedBurner and also submitted to iTunes. So we're covered in terms of different distribution channels there.
And all of those are free, so it really costs us nothing to distribute. FeedBurner is a Google product. iTunes you can submit for free. Drupal and WordPress are both open source. So this is, you know, very doable, and anybody who wanted to get into podcasting could do this on essentially a shoestring. I would say the hard part of our podcast is the content, you know, what we talk about and trying to make it relevant. I would not say the technology is a barrier, or shouldn't be a barrier. There's all kinds of books, and we've, I think, talked about resources before about how to podcast, but that's how we do it, Wells Tech style.
Yep, and we have put together a special page dedicated to this topic, kind of lifting the curtain. And so if you want to check out how we do it, you can visit our Wells Tech Wiki page, where we have photos and links to all the different equipment and software that we use.
Very good. So we'll keep doing what we're doing. And what we're doing now is we're going to play that interview I mentioned earlier with Don Patterson and Bill Esslinger. They were great enough to sit down with us. They are behind a podcast ministry, a radio/podcast ministry. That's a neat hybrid that we're seeing some churches get involved with. It's called A Reason for Hope. Don is the pastor down in Holy Word, Austin, Texas, and Bill, who used to be down there, is now up in St. Paul, Minnesota. He's the producer and webmaster of A Reason for Hope. So let's listen to part one of our conversation with Don and Bill. Joining us today on the Wells Tech podcast is Pastor Don Patterson from Holy Word in Austin, Texas, and Bill Esslinger joining us from St. Paul, Minnesota. Welcome, guys.
Hi.
We are interested in talking to you guys a little bit about a ministry that you've started called A Reason for Hope. Kind of caught our eye because it uses some nice technology tools to use in the service of our Lord and to spread the gospel. Maybe before we jump into what A Reason for Hope is, you can tell us a little bit about yourselves, kind of where you live, what you do, where you serve, and how you kind of got started, you know, connecting with each other and then ultimately launching this ministry called A Reason for Hope.
Okay, I'll kind of start. I've been the pastor here in Austin since 1992, and Bill and his family moved here in 1994. And so we work closely together. He's been a leader in the church, an elder, the president of our congregation, board of education, several offices. And his wife's been real involved in our teaching ministry and also retreats. And so we've kind of grown together in our love for the mission of the gospel. And it was around 2004, 2005 that I had a call. And when we were, as a leadership, were evaluating my call, they were talking to me about leveraging my gifts and abilities, and we were kind of brainstorming. And we sort of decided that if God led me to stay, that one of the ways we could leverage that would be to try to expand beyond just preaching at our church and maybe get on the radio. Mm-hmm. And so, anyway, that's how we got that started. But I'll let Bill talk a little bit more about himself.
Well, as Don mentioned, we moved to Austin, and Holy Word was the one of the small group of Wells churches in that area, and it was closest to our home, and we joined. And Don's teaching and preaching ability kind of helped reignite my faith. So, as he mentioned, I got involved in Holy Word and became friends with Don. And as he mentioned, a call was really the sort of the spark that got us thinking about maybe getting outside the four walls of the church with the teaching and what I feel is the strength of the Wells denomination in general, their trained workers and their understanding of a biblical doctrine. So at that point in time, based with that spark, we got in touch with a local Christian radio station, and they were the ones that kind of trained us and filled us in on what it would take to get a radio program started.
Maybe a little vignette. One of the passions that we both have is to get good, solid Lutheran doctrine, which is biblical doctrine, on the air. Christian radio is out there, and so I think for a long time, besides the Lutheran Bible Hour or something, the Lutherans are really almost not there, and yet we might tell our members that they need to watch out for doctrine, but not really ever share any good doctrine, and really airtime is there to be purchased. You can do it. So that was one of the impetuses to try to take this idea and get it out there beyond our walls, was to get the true biblical teaching on the air. And when we sat down with the radio ministry, and they've helped us a lot, Gene Bender at this local station, KLGO in Austin, it was real just to show you how little people know about what Lutherans teach in the Christian world. He was not even aware himself of our teachings regarding the Lord's Supper or baptism, because I was asking him if he hears in sermons our doctrine about those things, as a radio station, would they have a problem? And he had to have us explain what we meant.
Interesting. Well, I can see that it started as a local radio effort, but we're talking to Bill from St. Paul, Minnesota, so something must have changed in the process if he's still involved in it, and yet he is at that great distance from Austin, Texas. So can you tell us a little bit about that Minnesota to Texas connection?
Yes. I mean, the reason what prompted the move on my part was a job need. So, but I think what has helped us by being in this area what it helped us to realize was that, you know, the effort that goes into producing a radio broadcast is not insignificant. And it's something that, again, talking about the idea of leveraging our strengths and our skills, it's something that churches can partner on and share the resources that it takes to get a broadcast started. Because it's not too much, once you put together a radio program, there's not too much more effort to do it for three or four stations, radio stations, than it is to do it for one radio station. A big part of the effort is, aside from Don's Sunday preaching, is to do the audio production, and once that's done, it can be duplicated and made available to multiple radio stations. And that idea was broached as I got familiar and comfortable with churches here in the Twin Cities area. So right now there's two churches in particular that support the broadcast that happens in the Twin Cities area, and it didn't take a whole lot more effort or resource to, like I said, do it for a couple radio stations than it did to do it for one.
So tell us a little bit about the show format, frequency, and does it follow the same format each week? Is it as a message? Is it music? Is it conversational? Tell us a little bit about what the kind of the core format is.
It is a Bible teaching format, so it's taken from Don's Sunday sermons for the most part, and the things that are added to it are an introduction that basically talk about what the message is and what the insight is for the audience that's listening, and then and there's music overlaid that introduction into the sermon or into the message, and then at the end there's closings that are tailored to the local, whatever local broadcast it is. So if it's in Austin, Texas, it's mentioning Holy Word Lutheran Church and Don and the website. If it's in the Twin Cities, it mentions the local supporting churches, kind of gives them an advertisement at the end of the broadcast. But the bulk of the broadcast is very similar to a sermon that you would hear on Sunday mornings in our Wells congregation. And so the advantage to that is that Don prepares those messages every week for his local congregation, and this is just a way to share them.
And a big advantage for Don is that all he does is preach the sermon like he always does. And Bill does and a couple other men do a tremendous amount of work. And maybe, would y'all want us to talk about how that gets put together?
Sure.
Go, Bill.
First of all the people that are involved, and the way this got started was with volunteer help. We didn't, it wasn't started with any paid staff. It's all volunteers such as myself. There's a one man who records the service in the congregation, and something that's improved the quality of our broadcast is that Holy Word invested in higher quality microphones and recording equipment in their church, so that begins the audio quality begins with high quality being recorded. John Stevens is the man who records those, and then he makes those puts those audio files on an FTP site that Holy Word has, and that's how I gain access to it from 1,500 miles away. I pick up that raw audio, and I do audio editing, which is basically volume adjustments and clipping it and editing it down to a 25-minute broadcast slot, adding the introductions and the closing, overlaying the music. And then I put the finished version back onto an FTP site, and that makes it available to the radio stations. So the radio station in Austin and radio station in KKMS and myself and John never physically get in touch with one another, but we share the information through an FTP site.
Now, Bill, is that expertise that you had already, and what software do you use to do that work?
The software that we use is called GoldWave, and it's a really inexpensive audio editing piece of software that's out there. I think it costs maybe $45 now.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things that we learned when we first started talking with the Austin radio station and Gene Bender is that you don't need a studio. You don't need very expensive equipment, maybe aside from the microphones in the church themselves and that recording equipment. You can, all this stuff can be done, you know, on a personal computer with software that can be purchased relatively inexpensively. So the audio editing, so the surprising development, as we heard, it didn't take a tremendous investment in audio editing. And there has been a learning curve over the 4 years that we've been doing it, where we think our audio quality has improved quite a bit from what we did in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
But that just comes from having a ear and doing it, not additional investment in resources or equipment. So we've done it the same way for all 4 years, which is with that Goldwave audio editing software.
I'm not actually sure, but I think he may have left out one other link, and that is Bill listens to the sermon. He writes a new title to it. He writes an introduction for the radio voice and then sends it to a member, the introduction to a member back in Austin, on an email. And that member records his voice as the radio announcer for the broadcast.
Mm, okay.
So he takes Bill's thoughts and he becomes the voice. And if you click on and you hear a sermon, you'll hear this other man's voice named Paul Linden, who actually is a part freelance actor who's a member of our congregation. Mm-hmm. And he loves doing radio stuff. So he'll do that for free, sends it back to Bill. Bill glues it all together. And what comes out is a sermon that's a lot better than the one I preached on Sunday, because all of my verbiage is edited out.
Uh-huh.
And the people, I think, here would love to hear what Bill produces. And Bill can even move if I have a real strong close set, he can cut it out and move it over there too, or completely move it. And sometimes when I listen to the sermons he's edited, I just don't believe I organized it that well.
Mm-hmm. So
he puts
wonderful example of at least it occurs to me, it's a wonderful example of people using whatever gifts they have and kind of putting them all together, organizing it into a viable, demonstrable ministry.
Yeah. Without a lot of money, that's maybe the thing I want to communicate, that you can do this without a huge financial backing.
Mm-hmm. So is this a Christian radio station that it plays on, or just a local?
It's a Christian talk station, so it has a lot of the programs that are bigger and more frequent, things like
Focus on the Family, that kind of thing.
Or okay. Focus on the Family, right? Or
admittedly, you're reaching an audience that's tuning into Christian radio, but our first thought is, let's learn what we're doing and get on the air, and let's get Lutheran teaching, because there's so many errors thrown around on Christian radio,
mm-hmm.
and they're the easiest stations to work with.
Thanks again, Don and Bill, for your time, and we will look forward to playing the second part of that interview next week, where, Sally, you asked kind of an important question for, I think, a lot of our listeners. How do you leverage the internet to get even a broader swath or scope for this particular ministry?
That's right. And if you want to check out the A Reason for Hope resources on the internet, they have a dedicated website at areasonforhope.net, and they have a Facebook page where you can become a fan and get updates in that way. So we'll have links to that in the show notes.
Okay. Ministry Resources is next, and I wanted to share with our listeners something I stumbled on a little bit ago. And we've talked about tools like this before. It's called memorizenow.com. And it's a nicely done website that essentially allows you to build a tool or a flashcard that you enter your typically a Bible passage, and you tell it how I don't know what the right word is, Sally, how strong you'd like to make the process, the memorization process. So it strips out words and leaves blanks, and you can print out these so-called flashcards, and it will help you memorize Bible passages by forcing you to fill in the blanks. So you can start out very light and just have a word here or there. And each successive time you go through it, you can take out more blanks until you've got the entire verse memorized. I see great application here for catechism students.
Boy, that's just what I was thinking. I've got a sixth grader who's always loaded down with lots of great memory work, and he would enjoy learning it in this way, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm. And I am, my memory is terrible. I wish I had something like this when I was growing up, because I just struggled and struggled and struggled. So now it's all automated. MemorizeNow.com. As far as I can tell, it's all free. And the person that's done this has had Bible passages in mind, so that's kind of cool.
I could see a pastor becoming instantly popular with his catechism class as he introduces them.
Make
to
memorization
this.
Fun.
There you go.
Okay. You heard it here first. News and tech, what's the buzz in the tech industry?
Well, kind of hard to miss this week, Martin. It is the introduction of the Apple iPad, actually just an important press conference that Steve Jobs hosted last week, and a lot of buzz around it. We can't get our hands on it quite yet, but it's coming soon and at a reasonable price point as well. So that was kind of a surprise that the iPad will start at $500 and go up from there. So interesting, I guess, for me. I kind of took a step back and said, you know, what is the ministry application? What does this mean in terms of ministry? And believe it or not, Martin, I was kind of thinking about my friend Shane Hipps and what kind of message, you know, the iPad has, what kind of effect that's going to have on church. Mm-hmm. And I think what it basically means is that everyone's going to be connected all the time. As we look to the future, you know, everyone's going to have devices to be connected, and being a congregation and having a message to share means that we need to be in that digital space and part of that conversation, because that's where the future is headed.
I envision, and you know, maybe I'm way out there, but for my use, and for those of you that haven't heard what it is, it's essentially an oversized, and I'm probably oversimplifying, but it's an oversized iPod Touch. It has, excuse my phone here, it has an interface similar to an iPhone or an iPod Touch. And what's the dimensions on that? It's probably
close to 10 inches diagonal.
Okay, yeah. So it's a decent sized screen. But where I kind of see this headed, in at least for ministry, is the ability to have obviously the Bible on there, but all the different resources we've talked about that are available on the iPod Touch, you know, the Logos Bible software, YouVersion, you know, different commentaries that you could have, and people bringing this to Bible study. If they could make this annotatable, so you know, if you could, you know, take notes or whatever, I think this might be a nice addition to a Bible study.
So just a quick look at the future. We'll see what the adoption rate is over the next year or so with the iPad rolling out in the next few months, and you know, how common and easy and what kind of applications there are for it that do make ministry usage a lot more prevalent.
Very good. Shall we move on? Picks of the week.
Yep. This week I wanted to mention a pick that has become very practical and useful to me in my household lately, and that is a bibliography generator at bibme.com. Have a couple of kids that needed bibliographies recently.
Mm-hmm.
And
so
boy,
naturally, you went to the web.
That's right. I can remember those good old days of typing up those bibliographies and making sure everything was indented correctly and punctuated correctly. And now I go to the web and actually just type in the name of the book, and it generates all the information for me. It uses resources on the web to look up publisher and dates and all of the information that I need. I have the ability on bibme.com to manually input the information as well. So when it generates the information, I can edit that as well, or I can put in my own from scratch, and then it will generate a bibliography in one of four different styles: MLA, APA, Chicago, or Turabian. And you can actually read about each of those styles and get the detailed specs for each of those styles for different types of annotations right there on the website. So it can be a learning tool as well. It's not just that it does it for you, but it can teach you how as well.
Oh, okay.
You can create an account and save your bibliographies, and you can also download your bibliographies in RTF format. So bring them into Microsoft Word or OpenOffice Writer and go ahead and make changes to your bibliography or additional edits or incorporate them into other documents as needed. So very quick and easy to use and comparable to other websites. They had some information on their website about how they compared, and other sites maybe don't have as many different options for formats, or if they do, they might require you to have an account or whatever. And this site is pretty straightforward, and for the most part you can use it without even creating an account unless you want to save your work in some format, you know, for reference in the future or whatever. So super easy. Made my kids' eyes light up as they saw what a wonderful resource it was and how they didn't have to figure out all of those particular details themselves. So
again, something I wish I had as a kid.
Definitely.
Bid me.
Along with the computer to do it on.
Yeah, that would have been
electric
nice
typewriter
too.
To have to backspace and correct all your mistakes.
Exactly. All right. Fax Zero is my pick of the week. We live in an age where faxes, I think, are becoming more and more irrelevant, but once in a while you need a fax machine. And I don't have one at home. I have one here, but when I need to fax something from home, it is a bummer if they don't accept an attachment, a scanned attachment via email or whatever. I've got to either go to FedEx or figure out a different way, and lo and behold, the internet has a solution. And I stumbled on Fax Zero the other day because I changed banks, and one of my lenders required an actual faxed form with a voided check so they could do a direct debit, you know, from the account. So I've tried there's been a few other fax kinds of solutions out there, but normally they're paid for. Fax Zero essentially allows you to send a fax for free. You can have up to 3 pages maximum in one fax document. It'll take a Word doc or a PDF file, or you can type in text into a text box, and you can fax up to 2 free faxes per day before you have to start paying. If you're a more significant faxer, there's a premium fax account for $1.99 per fax. There is a cover page that goes along with it on the free one that probably has some advertising for Fax Zero. But if you are an infrequent faxer, and this is all outbound, of course, there's no inbound here, this is just a quick and easy way. You just upload it, you hit send, you get a confirmation message, and it's done. And it didn't cost you a dime, and you didn't have to leave your computer. So faxzero.com, just a nice little site that I found the other day, seems to work really well.
And it delivers to their fax machine. So this is people that want it to actually print out on their fax machine. Boom, there it is.
Right, yeah, whoever you want to fax to, you just enter in their name and their fax number.
Okay.
U.S. and Canada only. So if you're doing any international, it will not work for that. Sally, we've got some training coming up we want to talk about.
That's right. Just a brief mention of our Final Webs for Dummies class that's coming up in Milwaukee and New Ulm on March 9th through 11th, and in Saginaw, Michigan on April 6th through 8th. We're doing 3 days in each location, beginner, intermediate, and advanced. And a great way for you to kind of beef up your website, learn more about the big picture of how the website works, what all the different components are, and what you can do with it, and enjoy some face-to-face time with Martin and I as he leads the Milwaukee and Saginaw class, and I'm heading up New Ulm, and you can ask your questions in person.
So take advantage of that at bit.ly/FW4Dummies, and that'll be in the show notes as well. It's a good deal, and I'm looking forward to teaching the class, and we've got a number of sign-ups already, and so get in there early because we do have limited space available at each location, so you want to make that decision now. Hope you can come. Community feedback, Sally.
Well, we heard from several of our listeners during the week, Martin, starting with John Shoesmith, who's out in Washington State, and who does web work for Redeemer Lutheran Church there in Washington. John actually moved to a more remote part of the state, but because of the magic of technology, he's still heading up their web efforts. And you guys might remember John as being someone really involved in closed caption video production, but they have taken their web presence to another level by having online Bible classes, live streaming of their Bible classes. And John was just really excited with the results from that. As they're getting started, they also wanted to make it an interactive kind of session. And so they added, based on Martin's recommendations from last week, a Mibit chat session in the side panel of that live streaming page. And they're able to have people ask questions and things like that throughout the Bible class. In addition, one of the benefits with Mibit that John discovered was that it translates for you. So you can select from different languages and have the chat transcript translated as well.
Mm-hmm. And I did not know that, so that's great news.
Yeah, I think it's using a Google widget of some kind. Mm-hmm. And we've talked about that kind of technology before, even in our Wells Tech sidebar. You can translate the content there in that Google Friend Connect screen.
Yep.
So it's that same kind of technology. Another interesting component of their Bible class, they're just really thinking outside the box here, but they're using one chat window to actually transcribe the Bible class presentation that the pastor's doing. So if there are people that are deaf or hard of hearing, they can join in the Bible class using this transcribe window. So
that is awesome.
Lots of different facets to it. We're really excited for the work you're doing there, John, and the fact that he's 5 hours away and moderating the whole thing on a separate screen is just really impressive as well.
Sweet, so. Yeah.
Just definitely making use of technology to serve the purpose of spreading that great gospel message.
Yeah, get back to us, John, and tell us how that went. Because I don't think they've had – have they had their first one yet?
They had their first one last week,
another one
on Tuesday night of this week.
Good.
So,
awesome.
Yeah, we'd love to hear more about it.
Yep.
We heard from some of our favorite Twitter
Tweeters.
Friends. That's right. Jason Schmidt from Gethsemane in Omaha, Nebraska, shared a link to a great WebQuest directory for grade level and content area. So very well organized links to a variety of WebQuest, which is basically an education pathway that's developed on the web where people can walk through different steps to learn things about all different subject areas. They have it organized at elementary, middle school, and high school level for things like language arts, social studies, math, foreign language, physical education, and more. So check that out if you're looking for a WebQuest for a particular grade level or content area.
Mm-hmm.
And Gail followed up. Martin, I believe you mentioned Prezi in last week's podcast as being a new presentation tool, especially getting some coverage lately because they've opened up free accounts for educators.
Right.
And apparently Gail went right out and signed up for one of those accounts.
Who'd have thunk, yeah.
Yeah. She gave us some feedback that she really liked the education templates. So if you're an educator and you're looking for some cool templates to use for presentation purposes, Prezi may be the answer for you. So check that out.
Awesome.
We had an email from Pastor Tom Barthel, who's at Christ in Baxter, Minnesota. And Pastor Barthel is using our Christian Worship Lectionary series for Google Calendar. We've dedicated a Wells Tech Wiki page to this, giving you the instructions and links and things you need to add the lectionary to your Google Calendar. So if you are using Google Calendar, you may also find this a valuable resource, as Pastor Barthel did. And so we invite you to check that out.
So do you know where Baxter is?
I am not familiar with Baxter, Minnesota.
I am not either. So I bet it's by a lake.
Okay, lots of those in Minnesota.
About 20,000 of them, yeah.
And lastly, we heard from Pastor David Ernst, who's at Gloria Day in
Tinley Park,
Illinois.
Yes. That I know where that is. That's the south side.
Okay, and Pastor Ernst actually wrote on our Facebook page with some information we weren't aware of. He said he was going through our archive of shows, catching up on some that he hadn't listened to, and he found one to be missing completely from our Wells Tech site. And that is episode 91. It's from August of last year, and it's our last bonus Wells Tech Goodness episode where we talked about online forms. And boy, Martin, I don't know what happened to it. It's just not there. But
we will find
it back. And there is a bonus Wells Tech goodness page dedicated to it on the Wells Tech Wiki. We'll have a link for that in our show notes. If you're looking for information on how to do online forms, you'll find lots of resources there. And we'll work on getting that back into our archive of shows.
Very good. If you want to contribute to the show, there's many, many ways to do that. Go to the website, wellstech.wells.net, and leave a comment. You can email us at wellstech@wells.net. We have a Google Voice voicemail number, 405-4-WELLS. That's 405-367-9357. You can Twitter, as Jason and Gail often do, #WellsTech. We'll call that to our attention. We have a Facebook page, facebook.com/WellsTech. We use Delicious. We use Digo. There's a great listserv that's out there for your use. Go to the website to find out about how to use any of those methods. And we would love to hear from you, because that is my absolute favorite feature of this show, is when people talk to us.
That's right. If you want to lift the curtain on Wells Tech, that's the important stuff.
That's
sure.
Right. So next week, Sally, we are going to be talking about church logos. What makes a good church logo? There's all kinds of resources out there. We're going to wade through all that stuff and talk about, and I think every church should be concerned about this, because, you know, it's on the website, it's on your letterhead, it is the sometimes the first impression of your church, potentially it's on your church sign. So we're going to talk a little bit about church logos and maybe even some of the ways to create them with these digital tools that we have today. And, of course, we will listen to part two of our interview with the folks from Reason for Hope. Sally, that's going to about do it. Let's close with the music of Corbin Creek, their song Another Time from the album Could It Be Me. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We'll talk to you next week.
Sometimes I wonder, Abraham sleep those nights before he sacrificed his son? Did he toss and turn and wake up crying? And did he face his tears and flood his pillow full of tears? I don't know, I don't know. Guess I'll ask him another time. I don't know. Was it setting an example?